Vanessa Lee is the founder of The Things We Do, a top injector, and a trusted authority in the world of beauty and skincare. Now, she's hosting a podcast. Join her as she covers all the things we do for beauty, best kept secrets, and weird shit included.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to the Things We Do podcast. Right now I have Lauren Abedini, also known as I Am Kittens, not Kiddins with two D's, it's two T's. It's not a TT. It's not a DD, it's a TT.
My mom used to call vaginas TTs when I was little. So.
Oh, it's opposite. You know, in Tagalog, TT is, that's penis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, pekpek is vagina.
Pekpek is vagina.
Yeah.
Anatomy 101. Okay, so if you guys don't know, Lauren is fucking killing it in the world of just being cool and super super talented when it comes to music and DJ abilities. I want you to tell me about a little bit of where you started, because I remember close to like 10 years ago, maybe like 11 years ago, seeing you at the Crosby and thinking, who is this gorgeous angel among us? None of us deserve to look at her tonight. Don't even look at her. And I remember you hanging out with the DJ guys, and you guys were all working together at one point. Or how did this all get started? Because that was my introduction to my world of Lauren.
I'm just going to sit.
Just sit. Get comfy.
There we go. Yeah, so you know Jill, who is my longtime best friend.
Jill, I went to junior high with, you guys, and she had a fanny pack before it was cool.
Jill's so cool. It's obnoxious.
She's beyond her time.
So she's been my BFF since I was like 16. I met her when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just really cool. And so she was taking me out to like listen to different types of music. And I was like, oh my God, I love all of this.
Yeah.
Like, love all these sounds. Love, like, I was seeing DJing in a different light completely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we used to go hang out at the spot in Santa Ana called the Crosby, which was so cool.
Rest in peace, Crosby.
Oh, God, that was such a good place.
So good.
But it was like the best music and the best sweet potato fries ever.
Yep.
But yeah, I started just like chilling with a bunch of guys who were DJs. And then I would just like lurk because I wanted to like start, but I was too scared.
Yeah.
And then eventually I bought a pair of turntables from one of the guy's cousins.
Good for you. Which one?
I forget.
Wasn't Artie.
No.
Not Chad. Kofi.
No.
All these boys I went to like elementary school with. So their collective at the time was called My Hollow Drum.
I still have a My Hollow Drum hat.
So crazy. I have their stickers on my like old phones and stuff like that. And now they're all doing amazing things. But one of the guys. So you ended up purchasing some turntables.
Bought some turntables. And thankfully, you know, I had like a bunch of random guy friends, like one that worked with me at Mac, which was like one of the only straight guys who worked at Mac. Mm-hmm. But he used to be like an old school scratch DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple other dudes in the community kind of like helped me learn and get started. And it was still really hard. And I sucked for a year to the point where I was like, I'm not doing this. I suck. Fuck mm-hmm. this. And then eventually I got it like a little better.
Did you really suck though? Or was it like you were hard on yourself?
No, I really sucked.
Oh, okay.
I was real. Like,
real.
I didn't like learning from people who are just like, yeah, you know, just match the beats. I'm like, how though? What do you mean? Like,
and was this before like certain technologies where you can just like
auto? Yeah. You couldn't. I was learning on turntables with vinyl, and like even once I started incorporating like Serato, the computer program, it still was very like very minimal and basic at the time. So you couldn't like auto do things, and everyone was so far along that to them it made sense to be like, yeah, just match the thing with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, but like, what does that even mean? And how mm-hmm. do I know when to do it? And
yeah,
like, so I really sucked for a long time, and it was a lot of trial and error and frustration. And then finally, I forget who, but like somebody told me something. They gave me one bit of advice about like how songs are structured.
Yeah.
With like, you know, the intro and the chorus and the verse and blah, blah, blah. And like the math behind music. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden everything made sense. And I was like, oh, shit.
There is math behind music, right? Because it's all the counts and all of that stuff. I know nothing about it. I just know how to move to it.
Everything's divisible by four.
Wow.
Yeah, which I love. I love. I mean, unless there's some like experimental person who's
stuff
just, like,
going on. Yeah.
Yeah. But for the most part, you can rely on certain things. And once I figured that out, I figured out like the baseline formula to things. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ooh, now I know when to do mm-hmm. this and how to do that. And
how long did it take for you to get from the point of like starting to learn to the point where you're like, this feels like muscle memory to me. I can do this.
in my sleep. A couple years.
Like 2-3 years?
Yeah, I'll say 2 years.
And were you constantly practicing home, or was it like at gigs and stuff?
I practiced at home a lot, and then I used to work at MAC. I used to do makeup. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be a makeup artist for life.
You are a makeup artist.
It's really convenient because I don't have to pay anyone to do it's mine amazing. For shows.
I know. I feel like you do it better than anyone I know.
Thank you. But yeah, so I thought I was going to do makeup, and then I got in a car accident, and I was like, fuck this. I want to, you know, be in music and be and I just knew I needed to start in like nightlife. Mm-hmm. So I quit working at MAC. I got a job at this club in LA called Dre's.
Mm-hmm.
And
no big deal.
Yeah, you know.
Dre's. Can you just tell them about Dre's just for people who are like in Iowa?
Okay, so Dre's is like, it's this, or it was this big club on top of the W Hotel in
Hollywood.
It
was huge.
It was huge. And it was like bottle service. It was like Vegas, but in LA. And it was like Chris Brown would show up and do a thing.
Yeah.
And then like, I remember he showed up so many times to perform back then.
Yeah.
But it was always like the biggest celebrities showing up and like just jumping on stage to perform and like people spending way too much money.
Way too much money. How old were you around this time?
This was 2012 and I was 21, I think.
Oh my God, you were a baby.
Yeah.
What was it like for you at that age being exposed to like all of this and being right in the middle of it? How did you feel? Did you ever feel like you had imposter syndrome, or were you like, this is where I'm supposed to be?
Syndrome.
Oh my God, I'm always an imposter.
Forever. You know what? Actually, I was talking to somebody, you know, Create and Cultivate?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so Jacqueline.
I was talking to Jacqueline because we were on a panel together like 2 weeks ago. Love her. She's incredible. And we were talking about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And she, like, everybody has it. But then she's like, yeah, I was talking to Martha Stewart. And I'm like, casual. Okay. And
NBD. Martha.
Marty.
Okay.
And so she asks Martha Stewart if she ever deals with imposter syndrome. Yeah. And Martha Stewart's like, what is that? Never heard of it. Don't know her. Don't know that feeling. And I'm like,
she's irrelevant.
Yeah. I'm like, I need to get to that point.
Wow.
I didn't have imposter syndrome at that point because I was literally the assistant to the marketing director. I was like doing bitch work.
Sure.
And still going to college at the time. And, you know, just trying to figure my life out.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I convinced them to let me be the opening DJ at the club.
How did you convince them?
I just begged them because I was helping, but like my boss was doing all the talent buying at the time. He was booking all the DJs. And we always had like a handful of residents that were the openers.
Yeah.
So we'd book the special people and the first 2 hours the club would be whatever local opener person. And so I just kind of kept, you know, putting it in there like, hey, I really want to
Let
me do it. And then eventually like they started letting me have a regular thing. So I would open like a couple times a week, and then pool season started and I would play like by the pool on Saturdays, which Saturdays were more chill. Sundays were the like rager, fist pumping, crazy days. And this was at the height of like Avicii, Swedish House Mafia, like Calvin Harris.
Yeah. Just type, huge names.
Just like bangers, like intense house EDM.
Yeah.
Bubble was just starting to grow, which was so not my shit. I was like, I want to play hip hop.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was put in these rooms, and I had to learn to cater to people, to different types of people who wanted to hear different types of things, which I necessarily didn't like love. But it was like DJ boot camp because I had to learn to like DJ quickly, DJ well.
Yeah.
Be able to take requests from people who are spending $50,000 on a bottle.
Yeah.
Even if it was like some weird like random Journey song or like Billy Joel or whatever. And I'm like, I would never play this, but I'm going to make
like
it work.
It's like Willow Smith, Flip Your Hair.
Yeah. You just like had to make it work.
Yeah.
So that I got so much practice, and from there I started feeling much more comfortable DJing. And I'm like, you know, I can handle myself in any room. And then I was playing by the pool one day, and I used to get in trouble for playing hip hop because it was like the
why.
So the dude that was running the club at the time just didn't like it.
Sure.
He thought that other people also didn't like it, and that people only want to hear house music. And I was like, yeah, but they don't.
Yeah.
So no.
Was he American?
French.
Oh, of course. I was going to say he's European for sure.
Which I totally get. And there a lot of like big clubs at the time just wanted to hear that music. But I'm like, dude, there's other stuff. There's other people.
Yeah.
So when he wasn't around, because he wouldn't come on Saturdays because it was the chill day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing like throwback hip hop and R&B, and then like The Weeknd and like random other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who worked for Kid Cudi happened to be there, and they hit me up saying he was having a party, like a house party type thing, and would I DJ? It's for no money, but good exposure. And I was like, oh God, here comes the exposure shit.
Mm-hmm. Did you really think that? Or were you like, Kid Cudi, I'm going?
I totally was like in this point where I'm like, why can't you pay me?
Good for you. So how far into your career did you start feeling that?
I think because I started working at this club so regularly and I did get paid.
Yeah.
And it was consistent. And I was like, this is my time.
Right.
And like, why would I do something for free?
And aren't you retired, Cudi?
He did have a new album coming out, to be fair.
Okay,
but,
fine.
But still, I'm like, if somebody's really big and rich, why can't they afford
to pay the
people
you're hiring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do it. Why not? What else am I doing? So I played his party and like talked to him. He wanted to talk prior about like the vibe.
Oh, man.
So I like went over to his house and he had a whole conversation about like his vision for this. And I was like,
it's like tropical Christmas.
You know.
Something.
Something very out there. Something very specific.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, dude, let's do it.
Uh-huh.
Played the party. And then that was that. Didn't hear anything. And I'm like, cool exposure.
Yeah.
And then a month later, I got a text from him saying, hey, are you free? I need a DJ for tour. First show is on Friday. Are you available right now for rehearsal?
To go on tour with him for the album he just released.
He was about to release an album, but it was like before that. But he was starting a festival run. And I don't know what happened to his previous DJ.
Yeah.
Apparently last minute, he was gone.
Wow.
So literally.
So it paid off.
It did. And
Were you like, oh my God, karma. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm actually so grateful.
Like, I'm really glad I wasn't a like little snobby bitch that you know. Like, honestly, I wasn't in a place to be like, you have to pay me.
Yeah.
I was not established by any means to be demanding anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, then, you know, a few days later, I'm in New Orleans playing a festival in front of like 15,000 people.
Wow.
And then I was like, oh, no, it was 40.
40,000 people. Mm. That's a huge difference between 15K.
I don't know. I always mix it 14 and 40. But then I like picture the crowd and I'm like, nope, definitely was not 14.
No, that was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that's so wild.
From there, I just kind of like got some great connections through him. I met, I was playing a show with him and then I met Usher at the show.
Yeah.
It was like our second show together. And Usher's been like a huge supporter and mentor for me.
That's
for
amazing.
All these years. And,
okay, so over the span of your career, you've worked with some of these huge names and you've done amazing self for your own business. And then also giving back to the community is something that you stand strong on for sure. What do you feel like in your growth has been the number one most memorable piece of advice from whoever? Because I have some of these moments where whether it's like Kelly Baker or if it's like Sir John, people I've had on the show who over time have like just told me certain things where it's like, whoa, I didn't realize that this is why we're supposed to be doing all of these things and stuff. And just like aha moments, Oprah. So tell me who that was for you and what piece of advice that was for you.
I don't know if I have a piece of advice from somebody that really like blew my mind, but I have one memory from Usher that really made me be like, okay, like I'm on the right path here. And
I mean, we all want to know advice from Usher.
So when I met him at the show that I played with Kid Cudi, I guess he was like fascinated that, I don't know, like I knew how to DJ and the stuff I was playing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he flew me out a week later to Atlanta and I DJ'd for him and Jermaine Dupri in the studio. It was literally like them and like three other people from the team.
Amazing.
And he literally was like, I thought it was coming to like DJ party that they were throwing. And he's like, this is your chance. Show me what you can do. And
wow.
I was like, oh, sure. Casual. And I did. We had a fun time.
Yeah.
And like, I was just playing stuff that I knew would like impress him that I knew. And then stuff that I knew he never heard. And he'd be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all good and fun. And then the next day he was like, I want to talk to you about like your future and your career. And nobody had ever made me feel so like he saw so much potential in me. And he was like, you're dope and like you have something special and like you need to do this. Mm-hmm. And like, how can I help? And I had never felt in any facet of my life so like seen and supported
and backed validated. Yeah. All of that.
I had never had that before. And I was like, well, if this person thinks that like I'm special and I have something, then like I can't let my insecurities get in my way. And that's always been a thing that I think is advice I have to give myself, is to like get out of my own way. Because we all have so many dreams and things we want to do and things we think about. And then we talk ourselves out of it because we think, nah, it won't work. I won't be good enough.
Yeah.
There's no point.
It's too hard. I don't have enough time.
Yeah, just all kinds of dumb stuff. And I think just really remembering to like get the fuck out of your way.
Yeah.
And let, you know, really try something and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then you know, like, okay, this one wasn't it.
Mm-hmm. So have you mentored others where you make sure that if there's someone who's really standing out to you, you make sure that you let them know? Like how Usher did it for you, you do that same thing for them?
Yeah, I mean, I actually do a series of nonprofit DJ workshops for women.
Yes, let's talk about this.
Yeah, they're really fun. And
what's it called?
Power. It's like PWR.
Mm-hmm.
And I started these a few years ago, and it's like we've done a few every year.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we're really like ramping up to do a big thing. Big tour, which I've been wanting to do, and it's just like different things happen where it doesn't work out the way that I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I go teach a bunch of girls to DJ, which is so fun and
it's so cool.
And I'm like, I give them all the tips and tricks and information that like I wish I had when I first started, so I could skip that year and a half of sucking.
Yeah.
And then all the money we raise from like ticket sales, I'll donate to a local women's shelter or LGBT center.
It's amazing.
And then it's great because it like really fosters community between the other girls, and you know, I'm able to kind of like be there to give them any assistance they need, and you know, they all have my contact as well. And sometimes they're, you know, they start playing gigs and let me know or have questions about things. And yeah, it's nice to like have that open line of communication and feel like there's a community in place that has your back.
And you don't profit anything from this.
No.
Tell me why you do this. I mean, I know we all want to help and give back, but why is it so important for you?
Because I wish that I had that. I wish that I had that when I was starting.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many things that we want to do in life, and we either don't see somebody that we can identify with in those positions of power, or we, you know, get in our own way. We don't feel confident or empowered. We don't feel like we have the resources or access to the resources. And I'm just trying to like open some doors and leave the door open behind me for other people to come through, you know? And like down the line, I would love to make some kind of money from it. Like,
yeah.
I obviously forever want to keep the charitable aspect, but it is a lot of time and effort.
It's so much work. Yeah.
It really is, but it's so satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So down the line, I don't know if I can get some sponsors to like cover my ass.
Hey,
with some money.
We're calling all sponsors.
This
that would
actually,
be great. I think attention from this project, if I'm not mistaken, also brought you to Coachella, right?
Yeah. So I played Coachella 2018, and originally
amazing,
so fun.
It was Beyonce year.
It was Beyonce Day.
Beyonce Day.
So technically, I opened for Beyonce. but yeah, my agent had been like working on this, and then she didn't tell me until like it was locked in, confirmed.
Wow.
Because she didn't want to get my hopes up in case it didn't happen. Obviously.
Oh my God, of course.
I'd be so bummed. But yeah, I guess that was one of the things that like really got the attention of Golden Voice, who does Coachella. And it didn't end up happening, but they were wanting to do a series of like panels and interactive things at Coachella on the grounds. And one of the things they wanted to do was have me do a power workshop there.
Yeah.
Which all the like logistics didn't come into play in time with them, so we didn't do it. But yeah, apparently like they thought it was cool enough. So
it was amazing. Yeah. I remember hearing about that project and just thinking, oh my God, Lauren is always done big things, but I feel like when you get on the scale of Coachella, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so many people are exposed to the projects you're working on. I mean, it's fantastic. I feel like I've watched you like grown up.
I know, you kind of have.
I know,
I was
right?
Such a little like worm.
No, you were a beautiful worm nugget, first of all. Okay, so tell me what it's like. I know that you've spoken on this previously in other interviews, but I'm really interested in having our listeners kind of get a tidbit of what it's like to be a female DJ in a, you know, business where it's so male driven. Mm-hmm. What have been some of the biggest drawbacks to that situation? And then how have you kind of like broken down doors to rooms that you might not feel like you belong in and just made things work? And now you're in a space where like so many women have these doors open because of women like you. So tell me about that experience.
I think it's like when I got started, it was really tricky because I didn't have a team. I didn't have a manager, an agent. Yeah. I didn't have anyone to like have my back or negotiate for me or anything.
Did someone mentor you?
In this realm, no. I just kind of figured it out. Wow. Thankfully, I was a business student and I yeah. went to college for that. So I yeah. was like comfortable negotiating and whatnot. But I mm-hmm. also, I guess, was able to look at the situation objectively and mm-hmm. be like, okay, so me asking for more money directly yeah. might seem kind of sus. And people have stereotypes of women already, especially in the space.
Right.
How can I navigate around them?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's one thing, like, if a guy asks for more money, it's like, oh, he's just asking for more money. But mm-hmm. if a girl does, it's like, she's a diva, she's a bitch. Why does she think she's worth more? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a whole thing. So one thing I did that was super helpful was I made a fake manager. Her name was Denise. Denise could be reached on Gmail and Google Voice. Oh, my God.
I love this so much right now.
Denise was a
bitch. Tell me
about
Denise. Oh, God.
Denise got me paid. Denise got me paid on time. Denise asked for more money from me. Like, she was on it. And it was so helpful to have that, like, buffer.
Yes.
So that I didn't have to be the bad guy. And it yeah. could be somebody else. And funny enough, my first agent that I ended up having, her name ended up being Denise.
No way. Swear to God. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But
it's so funny because sometimes I'll say, like, to my assistant, I need to have a reservation at this restaurant that's like a Michelin star restaurant or whatever. And, yeah. like, I know they're booked out months in advance. And she'll say, like, oh, like, do I just say, you know, table for two or whatever? I'm like, no. Say, I am Vanessa Lee's assistant. I'm calling on behalf of, I need this. And I used to, before I had an assistant, and people don't give a fuck. It's just like creating clout, right? Yeah. It's like just putting up this screen of like, oh, I'm somebody and I belong here.
Yeah.
And you just make it happen. I think
it's
when
like
I was like,
value.
Absolutely. When I was 25, I was calling like Michelin star restaurants saying like, this is Vanessa Brown's assistant. That's my maiden name. This is Vanessa Brown's assistant and she needs a table tonight or I'm going to get fired. Help me. Oh. And like I would get in and it would be ridiculous, you know, but it's like, oh my God, you guys. And then behind the scenes, it would be like, Chini, we got in. Like, what? You know, it's like,
you have
it's
to,
one of those things.
You have to just, like, figure out how to, like, you know, mess with the system and navigate it.
Absolutely.
So that was really helpful. Some things I have dealt with in the past that are annoying is with, like, promoters.
Yeah.
I'm super, super nice and chill.
Yeah.
Especially in, like in work scenarios and in general. I feel like I'm really nice. But, you know, if I show up for a gig and the person who booked me, I'm like, I'm very thankful and I want them to like me because mm-hmm. they're paying me to be there. Mm-hmm. And like, thank you for giving me money, sir.
Yeah.
And thank you for thinking that I'm worth, you know, bringing out. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a bit shy sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't party. Like, I'm a very grandma-ish person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get to a club and I'll like just be chilling in the green room and like have a little drink and have a little fruit snack, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm grateful and I do my work and then mm-hmm. I'm out. And I've heard some people just like say that, like, she's such a bitch. She's such a diva. And I'm like, where? What?
That's crazy. That's the last thing I would ever think about. Every interaction we've had, you've always been so sweet and so accommodating to everyone around you, even though we're serving you.
It's like, it's so funny to me that I was like, I know I was nowhere near a bitch. Maybe I didn't want to like take shots with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
Or like maybe you were trying to flirt with me and like you're barking up the wrong tree, sir.
Right.
Whatever. Like that's the most I can imagine. But
yeah.
I've dealt with that. I've dealt with showing up to clubs and having bouncers not let me in because they think I'm like some groupie or trying to get on stage.
Wow.
When I'm like about to play.
Yeah. So just assuming. What about I would imagine that it's different for when a female DJ shows up versus a male DJ showing up for a gig, and like different requests of like, have you ever had requests of like, this is the vibe we want you to look like tonight? Or,
oh my God.
Like, I'm sure no male DJs are getting like, can you split your hair on this side versus that side? You know,
I went on tour in China, and the first gig I had, first of all, I got really sick on the flight. Like halfway through, it was this like evil flu hit me or something. So I'm deathly ill, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in this foreign country where I don't know anything. I traveled alone at that time, which I shouldn't have gone on that tour alone because it was so like far and whatever. But yeah, I got in, and for like 24 hours, I'm literally like in bed dying, taking medication that I like don't even know what the hell I was taking, honestly. And then the next day I had to go play this club. The promoter picks me up, and I'm wearing like, I dress, I guess, a bit more tomboyish. And so I'm wearing like, and I'm sick on top of it. So I'm wearing like some, I don't know, I think I was wearing like leggings and some sneakers and like a baggy t-shirt.
Right.
And he was like, oh, is that what you're wearing? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, how are they going to know you're the DJ? And I was like, because I'll be the one DJing. And he's like, oh, well, like, you know, usually a girl's like, you know, they dress more sexy bling bling. Like, why aren't you dressed more sexy bling?
Why aren't you sexy bling bling?
I know. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm like, excuse me?
And you just have to brush that stuff off and just keep going, right?
Yeah. I was actually, like, he mentioned it multiple times throughout the night. Oh, my God. And at that point, I messaged my agent the next day. She's like, how did it go? And I'm like, well.
What the heck is this?
I wasn't sexy bling bling enough.
Do you now have your signature look, though, of like, do you do like a specific, when I see you, I feel like I see you without makeup, with makeup. Sometimes you'll have like winged eyeliner, sometimes not, just like every other girl. But do you feel like when you're working, do you have a specific look that you're like a, you know, branded makeup look that you
I feel like most people
go on stage with?
Think I always have like a cat eye or a wing. That's usually like what I do when I go out.
When I think of a cat eye, I think of you.
Oh my God, thank you.
It's the most perfect cat eye.
Thank you.
When I try to do a cat eye, you know what happens? It's ridiculous. Like I'll try to get a full, one eye is perfect, and the other eye, I don't know what happens to the other wing.
You have to start on the shitty side first.
That's the problem. I don't know what it, like I just start wherever. I haven't like analyzed it enough. My left eye is my sleepy eye though. That's probably the side that I need to start on.
And are you right-handed?
I am right-handed.
Yeah, start on your left eye. Because then it's easy if your right eye is your, like, good eye and you're right-handed, it's easier to match your right eye to your left eye.
This is the most important information right now when it comes to winged eyeliner. I had no idea.
Yeah, like, my left side is still tricky for me, so I'll usually do my left side first.
Yeah.
Because then whatever that ends up being, if it's funky or something, I'm like, or it's pointing one direction, I'm like, okay, I can make my right one match that.
Yeah.
Versus doing my right side all fantastic and then having to make my left side.
Yes. Like, this is harder. The same with injectables. So when I inject patients, I have to start with a side that has more volume depletion or is lower, because if I start on the good side and I make that look even more bomb, then we're fucked for the other side because it's like good luck trying to work with like half a syringe. You know what I mean? So, oh my God, it's the same thing, which is why I only wear mascara and like eyebrows sometimes. I'm like, Vanessa, you're better than this. You could wear like winged eyeliner.
You don't need to wear any makeup. Your skin is insane.
Thank you. But it's fun. You know, we like to. Okay, so let's talk about like some fun stuff now. I want to talk about some beauty treatments because you and I, if people don't know this, Lauren and I talk for hours, I feel like, about beauty treatments, about things we've heard on like the street. We're not on the streets.
I'm in weird Facebook groups.
Yeah, like, I mean, we are in a same weird Facebook group also. So like those type of things, and then things with our girlfriends, and then things on just like weird blogs and stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me some of your favorite beauty tips you've been given over time, whether it was like from your mom or from your aunt or whatever.
So no one in my family is psycho about beauty. It's just
where did this come from?
I don't know. Ever since I was little, I was like, ooh, makeup. Like, I've always been fascinated by that. So I don't have any, like, cool ones from family. But I've just kind of tried everything that exists. I'm like, oh, new thing? Let's see how this works.
Has there been a staple over the past 10 years where you're like, I will not ever not do this?
I have to exfoliate a lot.
Ooh, how often?
I used to do it every day.
Wow.
my skin gets just really congested. Mm-hmm. So I have to like be on top of it. But I've chilled out. So now I do like every other day.
Yeah.
And with a more like mild one. Like I started using this Aha Baha one from Skin Medica.
Yes.
That I really like.
Yeah. The white bottle.
Yeah. It's really gentle.
Or the white tube. Yes. Yeah.
I love that one a lot.
You know what's so funny is that breaks me out.
Really?
And I have to use the strong, just the 20% glycolic wash. They don't make it anymore. That's why I ended up making my cleanser. Oh, but that Aha Baha
scrub.
Yes.
I bought that from because you recommended
yes.
it.
Yes. So that's like a super strong one, but I can use that 3 times a week. But the Aha Baha, because of my skin, I'm like super, super dry.
Yeah.
It dries me out even more. But for acneic prone skin, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I really like it.
So you
like
do
it.
Like physical exfoliation and chemical exfoliation.
Yeah.
Then.
I'm just like, get it off, which I really I need to do a peel, I think, top of the year.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's time. But yeah.
With your skin, though, it's actually so lovely. It's so beautiful. It's so smooth. So I would say with your skin, I would do more so like the less invasive peels versus like the super, super strong peels. And yeah. if you do a stronger peel only like once a year,
I just
for
need
my
it for
skin,
melasma.
Yeah. That's yeah. You guys, did you just hear this? Lauren said that she has melasma. So all of you patients coming in acting like you're the only person in the entire world that has melasma.
No one talks about melasma.
No one talks about it. It's so many annoying. People have melasma, and it's something that I can harp in for sure, but from your own experience, can you talk about what melasma is?
So basically it's just like chronic hyperpigmentation at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you can get rid of it and then you go out in the sun and ta-da, it's back. It's just like this evil bitch that won't go away.
Yeah.
it's so annoying.
Yeah. And it's different from sunspots in the sense that sunspots and sun damage are much more superficial within the skin. And they usually look like little freckles or maybe spots that come up over time. And they're not, you know, in hallmark areas. But melasma hyperpigmentation looks like this underlying tinted staining of the skin. And it usually comes up on the upper lip, right on the cheeks, both sides, and on the forehead. That's very, very common. It's very common also in women of color, but it happens to people with all skin types. And it's something that's hereditary. It's not something that you've done incorrectly. Some of my patients come in, and because it can be triggered by hormonal changes. So if someone says like, oh, my babies, when I gave birth to them, it caused melasma. Now I have this like terrible staining on my skin. It wasn't caused by them. You've always had it laying dormant in your system in either a hormonal change or like a terrible, you know, like skin treatment that you had triggered it, or like, you know, it could be anything, like a really, really rough day out at the beach where you just didn't protect yourself enough. Any one of those things could have set you off. And it's one of those things you'll always have for the rest of your life. But you can do things to subdue it, like Lauren said. But it's tricky because you have to find out what your triggers are, and it really makes you pay attention to what your body responds to. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, as much as you'd like to like ignore things and live your life, it'll show up and be like, hey, I'm here. You're doing something to aggravate me and make me angry. So
and
it really makes you pay attention.
It's like, because I'm in this Facebook group for melasma.
Yes.
And everyone's constantly like trying new things, and some things work great for certain people. Some people can just do like hydroquinone and Retin-A and it's like gone. And then other people have tried literally everything and it just won't budge. Some people.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about that Eucerin line?
Tell me.
That everyone's having great luck with that.
Wow. Yeah. Tell me more about this so that people can look into it.
So it's not available in the U.S. You have to buy it from overseas.
Of course.
It's really reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a pigment correcting serum and then a spot one, a spot treatment. Neither of them have hydroquinone or anything. Like, it's not harsh.
Yeah.
And people, like, I can show you the before and afters in the group. It's crazy.
That would be amazing.
Within,
have you tried
like,
it out?
Weeks, I got it, yeah. I got the spot corrector, and I noticed a bunch of lightening.
Yeah.
But then a few weeks ago, I got, like, a really, really light, like, mandelic
peel.
Like, super, super light one during a facial.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks after that, I was outside, and it was really warm. And
yeah.
There she is.
Yeah.
Back with a
fucking. If you live in Southern California, you're so fucked if you have melasma, because it's like one day it'll be 50 degrees in the morning, super overcast. And then by 2 p.m., it's literally 89 degrees and super dry, and the whole state's on fire.
Yeah. It's fucking annoying. There's no winning.
It's terrible. But people like you definitely, and people who are in the group, are like being proactive as much as possible and trying things. Do you feel though, like, If you're not seeing a dermatologist or if you're not seeing like a skin specialist, people in the group trying things that other people have tried that you can maybe damage the skin a little bit, or do you feel like it's been more, it's done more good than bad?
Okay. There, which is, I think, really helpful. Like, I've learned a lot of things from that. Like, a lot of women's melasma got way worse from microneedling.
Yeah.
A ton of them.
This is really interesting. Deep, yeah.
And it just kind of, like, unloaded all the pigment that was chilling there.
And then there was no post-care instructions. Exactly. They just microneedle them and send them out into the world, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, things like that, or, like, some have gotten... A lot of people were using laser stuff still, and that's the worst thing. So everyone, whenever there's a new person in the group, they're like, hey, what do I do? Everyone's like, no microneedling, no laser, no crazy peels.
Yeah.
Cosmoland's great. This is good. Stay away from that. Mm-hmm. It's been really helpful. A lot of people talk about Triluma, but you have to get that from the doctor.
Yeah. We also talk, I think, the biggest thing I think in the past year that's been great for the melasma community has been using like tranexamic acid, but orally also. So some people take it orally and it's a lot more effective for them than just doing the topical.
See, I need to find a better dermatologist, which I've been telling you about. I have like shitty HMO insurance and they sent me to someone.
Yeah.
And he was like, you could take this pill, but it'll kill you.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
you might grow a third leg.
Yeah.
So I think that Manhattan Beach Dermatology is fantastic. Dr. McGovern, Lizette, Angie, they're all amazing. In Newport Beach also, if you guys are wondering, if you're in Southern California, I love Newport Derm Studio. So amazing. But it is really important. You guys can't see like your normal, you know, like, I don't know, some girl who like also does your brows that happens to do facials in the back to trigger something like my melasma. It is one of those skin medical conditions, and a lot of searching has to be done to figure out what's right for your skin for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about microneedling in the past. So we've tried to do everything possible to work with like melasma and hyperpigmentation and just keeping the skin as youthful as possible and nice and plump. You and I are obsessed with like dewy, plumpy skin for sure. And I've talked to you about, in the past, I revealed that Filipinos, depending on like where, you know, what province you come from and what area you're in, a lot of Filipinos are exposed to the tradition of when a woman gets her first period, we take that underwear and then we soak it in water. And then with that water that's mixed with some of the blood, like the essence of like your, you know, whatever, your panty, then you take that and then you use it as kind of like a toner for the skin. Mm-hmm. And the whole belief is that there's so many stem cells in period blood and you can use it to combat acne. Mm-hmm. And I know that some people are like, most people are cringing like, oh my God, first of all, it's like a cultural tradition. All right. So let's like, be sensitive
it's your
to that.
Body, chill out.
And it's your own blood.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm not saying everyone take your period blood and put it on your face, but I mean like we in the office do take your own blood and we can microneedle it into tissue. So
why not take a really like strong, concentrated,
even stronger pure stem cells from your uterine lining, the womb.
It's made to grow babies. Yes. Like, that's just gonna make your face a baby.
Yes. So I told you about this and you're like, I want to experiment.
Yeah.
Tell me about your experimentation.
So I still want to do a more like consistent treatment with it because I've tried it a couple times.
Okay.
I've tried it a couple times where like once I did it like a mass.
Yeah.
Which after you told me about this, I read a ton and I'm like, oh my God, there's so many things.
Yes, absolutely.
And also I thought, I wonder if this will help my melasma. I'm like, they'll try anything.
Yeah.
So I did try the mask or as a mask, just like farm to table, just threw it on.
Farm to table.
And my skin was so.
Did you have to collect it in a cup?
No, I literally farmed a table.
Well, that's amazing. Good for you.
It's like, I just got out of the shower, whatever. Let's
I'm
go
ready
for it.
To do this.
Yeah. My skin was so plump and like tight and smooth and soft.
You're
after,
kidding me.
Swear to God. And then I did try needling as well. And like just texturally was so good. I didn't notice anything crazy as far as pigmentation issues.
Yeah.
But I don't see why it wouldn't help.
Yeah.
But I think it's something that like if you do it a bit more like on a regimen,
you might see better results?
I think the whole thing with using stem cells, or what's closest to stem cells, PRP, from your blood in combination with microneedling in the office, is because it's such a strong growth factor that whatever you're doing, the purpose is amplified when you mix it with PRP or PRFM. And with dealing with hyperpigmentation, you'll hear a lot of studies on melasma and hyperpigmentation being corrected with microneedling. But the whole thing is, if you go too deep or too strong, or if the skin is too dry, you don't have enough slick on the skin while you're doing it, or if you don't aid any kind of like post-care procedure and tell the patient about skincare afterwards and how they have to take care of it, you can go so wrong with it. Just like chemical peels, right? Yeah. The peel is great, but the whole point is when you have that, those outer layer of skin really coming off of you, you have to put on the right things on the skin. Yeah. So it's so interesting that you shared this with us. Thank you so much. I am going to, I think my period is due in the next few days. I'm super irregular. I'm going to do a whole thing on it and do a video and be like, this is inspo via Lauren and also the Philippines. Most Filipinos are going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You are representing us right now. Yeah. Most people, I've talked to my girlfriends and they're like, we never fucking heard that before, Vanessa. Like, that's from your province, okay? And I'm like, what? We're in the north.
It's okay. I'm sorry. It's free. I'm going to do
it. It's fucking free. Yeah. And it's your own stuff. Let's not, yeah. Okay, I love it. Okay, I wanted to also talk to you about like when your girlfriends and when you're in a group of like women just chilling and hanging out, when you're having girls' night, when you're like at your spot, do you, because I know you and I talk about beauty nonstop, but are you all like this? Are you like the beauty authority for everyone? Because I'm that for my friends. I'll be like, do not do this shit. This is what you need to do.
1000%.
And they just do whatever you say.
Pretty much.
I love it. Yeah. Okay, so what's your biggest, what's like your number one tip to your friends?
I try and get everyone on like some kind of like acid cream.
Yeah.
Like use a glycolic something.
What's your favorite cream?
Oh, that's hard. What is my favorite cream? Actually, I really do like the Skin Medica glycolic.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah,
my
yeah.
My skin is so
the plump. Renewal cream?
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. One. We sell it.
I really love that.
It stings like hell.
But I like it because I'm like, ooh, it's working.
Me too. Yeah. I feel the same way.
I really like that one a lot. And then, yeah, I get everyone on that. And I'm just like super psycho about people wearing sunscreen because that's, I think, one of the reasons my melasma got so bad.
It's so important.
I didn't know how complicated sunscreen can be and like what kind to look for.
It's
and
so unnecessarily complicated.
Just make one that works. Like, why are there all these other ones that don't do what you need it to do?
Make one that works. You know, I think we covered sunscreen in one episode, but when I was doing some research, I found out that the US, we haven't had a new sunscreen ingredient introduced here in the US since 1999. Oh my God. And here Korea is like, they have all of this non-toxic wonderful ingredients that they place in for like PA++++ sunscreen, and we're just like held behind because of like the FDA and everything.
Yeah,
which is supposed to be helping us.
Yeah, well, it's not.
Okay, it's totally not. I want to ask you one thing. We have this segment called Self-Care Club. Self-care club. And we just basically talk about just one thing we've been doing in the past week to make sure that we set time apart for ourselves, whether it's like therapy or like lighting a candle or baths or whatever. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing this past week to make sure that you set apart time for yourself?
I meditate every day.
Oh my God.
I'm a psycho if I don't.
How long have you been doing this for?
Years.
What? Yeah. Are you serious? Mm-hmm. You're such a deep bitch.
I have to. I'm really sensitive. And if I like, especially since I travel and I'm around so many people, I know people are always like, I'm an empath, but like, I'm really an actually. Yeah. So it's really hard for me to exchange energy with people so much for my job and everything. And I, you know, I'm really close to the people in my life. So if someone's going through a hard time or whatever, like I really absorb it.
Wow.
So I have to be super active about like, releasing feelings that are not mine and making sure I'm like really in tune with myself and just kind of quieting certain emotions and rebalancing whatever. It's just like inner self-care. It's like giving my soul a facial. Like I have to do it.
Oh my God, I love that.
It's gonna break out.
Do you do it right when you wake up?
No, I like doing a midday. Mm. When I wake up, I like can't really focus. Mm-hmm. And I like to have my coffee. I like my little morning ritual. But mm-hmm. I do a midday one. Thankfully, I'm self-employed, so I don't have a schedule.
Hey.
But yeah, I'll light a candle and I put in my little headphones. Yeah. And I listen to like nature sounds.
Yeah.
Or like the crystal bowl things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just do what I got to do.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We love you so much. If you guys have any questions, let us know where we can find you.
You can find me on the internet at all my socials are at I am kittens, like I am baby cats. That is me.
Thank you so much. Okay, we'll see you guys.
Bye.